Hey, I'm R. Allen Brooks, the host of this podcast, and
I'm Dele, your producer and editor.
See, there's a lot of cool to just have one name. You got like the Cher Prince thing going on, but I think you can carry it.
Hey, but you have the first initial, which is also right. Such a cool thing in the writer's world, I feel like, especially those initials.
It's the secret, not a secret. Like, it's not a secret, but people are always like, what does that stand for? Sometimes I tell them Reverend just to see what they say. Anyway, okay, so we just we talked with Amanda Lopez. That'll be today's episode. It's a really good conversation.
Yeah, that was a really dope conversation with Amanda. Shout out to Amanda for being a guest, someone that I found on Instagram through a friend.
Right.
So really a serendipitous moment for her to come on to the show, but I think a perfect fit.
Yeah, I don't know if it got into the camera, but I did mention her hat game, but her shoes are really dope. So Amanda told me that she's a twin, and her twin sister designed her shoes, or at least gave her the shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of cool. I really love hearing about art that I don't know much about, right? So, like, I don't know a lot about the art of photography. So hearing her journey from, like, the first time art spoke to her, the first time that she realized that photography was, like, the thing she wanted to do, and then realizing that portraiture, like, people were what she wanted to show in her photography. Oh, that's really interesting. So that's the stuff that people, that you'll hear, like, when you listen to this episode.
Yeah, it's a really cool trajectory, and she had some great takes on like fear.
Yeah,
and there was a great conversation about imposter syndrome, and some laughs to be had as well, and a little bit of conversation about country music. Right. First time that's ever happened on this
show. It was a first. You're right. Yeah,
It's a lot of firsts for this episode. Make sure that you subscribe to How Art Is Born wherever you get your podcasts, and also check out MCA Denver on YouTube, where you can watch the video version of this podcast.
Yeah, and spread the word, please. Like, leave reviews and stuff like that. Like, we love doing this podcast, and I've talked to people who really enjoy listening to it, but we would like for more people to be able to share in it, and you can help us do that. So thank you.
Yes, thank you. And tell a friend to tell a friend.
Right on. Welcome to How Art Is Born, a podcast from the Museum of Contemporary Art Denver about the origins of artists and their creative and artistic practices. I'm your host, R. Allen Brooks, artist, writer, and professor. Today I'm joined by Denver and Los Angeles-based photographer Amanda Lopez. Say hello.
Hello.
All right, so to start us off, can you tell us a little bit about who you are?
Sure. I am Amanda Lopez. I am originally from Sacramento, California, born and raised there. I am a photographer. I work in like the commercial, editorial, and art spaces. Hmm. And I'm newish to Denver. I've been here for, less than maybe around like 7-8 months. Oh, like kind of going between, here in Los Angeles and trying to figure out what like the next part of my journey is. And Denver felt like a good place to be. Reminds me a lot of Sacramento, oddly. I tell my husband that all the time. I'm like, there's something about Denver that feels familiar to me. I think it has something to do with like, it's like, it's a city. It's like a medium sized city with lots of like amenities that big cities have, but less traffic, which I'm really into.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
I mean, so I grew up in Atlanta, but I've been here for quite a while. But one of the things I dig about Denver is that the artistic community is generally not very competitive with each other. Like, different people from different cliques will show up to support each other's stuff.
That's dope. I love that.
Yeah. Like in comics and music, like I've just seen it over and over again. And so I really dig the way that the arts community participates in each other's stuff here.
That's awesome. I'm excited to kind of be more a part of that community. You know, when I first moved here, community is important to me. And when we moved here, we know like 4 people here, and they're primarily, I met them through my husband, and so I was like, I need some of my own friends. Of course, they're my friends now. We're homies. I love them. But I know that it's important because I'm away from my family. I'm away from, like, the community that I had built in L.A. Mm-hmm. You know, I really wanted to make some friends in Denver. And one of the first things I did was to reach out to people that I saw on Instagram, like artists. And I'm also part of this collective called Diversify Photo, which is like photographers from all over the world. It's like a database. And there's a bunch of photographers on that network here in Denver. So I reached out to them and just connecting, right? It's so important, like, to connect and also to know other artists. And it's the few that I've met have been awesome. And I can't wait to, like, meet more folks and really be a part of the community.
Word.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So I like to start off with people. I usually ask two questions. One is, when is the first time you remember art being significant or moving to you?
Okay.
And then the second one is, when did you feel like you wanted to create art?
Yeah, I have like two kind of distinct memories of like when art was, when I kind of discovered art or, you know, like I've always liked to draw and paint. And, you know, my mom, I think, recognized that when I was little. So she'd buy me books and, you know,
that's cool.
crayons and stuff. And I remember she got me this series of books, and I wouldn't be surprised if they still made them, but they were like kids books about like artists. And so like a Leonardo da Vinci book, a Van Gogh book. And I remember looking at the Van Gogh book specifically, and I was like, whoa, what is this? Like, I really just appreciated his like painting style. And then I was really into like Bob Ross when I was little, you know? So like I'd sit in front of like the, you know, the TV and just watch. And that was like really... seeing those things like at a young age, you're, when you're exposed to them, you're like, oh, cool. That's awesome. Like someone is doing that for a living, or that's, you know, a path that you can choose. And so, yeah, getting those books when I was little and then seeing Bob Ross on TV, like kind of showed me like, oh, art is something that people do and you could maybe do it too. And
that's so cool.
Yeah, I saw that and I really wanted to be a painter, man. That was like my initial like... I think dream, like, I'm like, I'm going to go to Paris, I'm going to paint on the CN and just like, you know.
So what age was this like that you were thinking of being a painter?
Little, like I was like 8 years old drawing Ninja Turtles and I was like, I'm going to go to Paris, I'm going to go to Italy, you know. Nice. And then my third grade teacher told my mom like, oh, he recognized, you know, maybe something in me. And he was like, oh, you know, you should enroll Amanda in after school classes, like I see that she really likes this. And so she did. And I loved the classes, but learned right away that like painting, it didn't come naturally in the way that I thought it should. I was like, why can't I paint like what I'm imagining in my head? And so that was kind of frustrating, but I still enjoyed it. I still enjoyed drawing and you know, watercolors and stuff like that. But then in high school is when it all kind of changed. I always liked the arts, like I said, but in high school, I took a photography class. It was like part of our electives in school. Mm-hmm. And that was like when the light bulb really went off. I was like, oh, this is it. This is it. It's photography. It wasn't painting, though I love it. It's photography. And so high school was like kind of like the tipping point for me, which I think is, you know, I know a lot of folks who after have taken a photo class, like, you know, they found their path. And that was the story for me.
Okay, in high school when you were doing the photography, did you immediately gravitate towards like portraiture, or what were there other things?
Yeah, I think in the beginning I was trying to figure out like what I like. I just knew I liked it. And of course when you're in school, you have all these assignments. So like, okay, take a still life. Now go in the studio and do this. Now go take pictures of the football team. So you're kind of exposed to like all of these different types of photography. Mm-hmm. And I just remember enjoying it because I went to school when you learned film. So I was processing my film in the dark room. Yeah, and like making prints. And so I just liked the whole process. But then the more you do, the more you figure out what really feels like good for you. And so for me, I started realizing probably around my senior year, like, oh, it's people, it's portraiture. Like, that's my jam. Hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so then what is the appeal of portraiture and people for you?
Oh, man, I think that's a good question. I like the connection that you make with people when you photograph them. I don't know. I think having done different types of photography, you know, there's a hot second when I, you know, shot weddings. I tried photojournalism and those things just didn't feel like what I was supposed to do. And when I started doing like individual portrait sessions, like that felt like, oh, this is it. Like it's working with someone collaboratively and making a photo. And I think the gratification of like creating something that both people are psyched on is what like keeps me going.
It's an interesting process to me because as someone who's not a photographer and someone who's had a lot of pictures of me I didn't like, I wonder, you know, finding, it seems like the art is in finding a image that represents the person as you're experiencing them Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you talk about like what that is to you. What is it you're trying to express? What are you trying to communicate when you take a photo of someone?
I think like a feeling. I think for me, like a successful photo is one that both people like, the photographer and like the person that they're working with.
Yeah.
I think in the beginning, I was really into making photos that had kind of like a melancholy to them. I was really interested in the duality of like people's feelings, like the joy, but also the sorrow. So I guess kind of the human experience. It sounds, I don't know, but I was looking for that. And now I think as I get older, I'm like looking for the joy in people, like, and I want to make those kinds of photos, you know? And so I get a lot of gratification and satisfaction from making portraits of people. And again, like that, something that both people are proud of, and maybe that shows the person like a different way of seeing themselves. Because a lot of the folks I work with, like when I work editorially, people are not used to having their picture taken. So I take a lot of pride in creating like a safe, comfortable space, like where people feel free to be who they are and are open to collaboration and ideas and things like that, you know?
NCA Denver at the Holiday Theater is a year-round performance and event space that is an extension of the Museum of Contemporary Art Denver. The Holiday is home to a spectrum of creative expression, including original productions, live music, film screenings, artist talks, and serial programming like Mixed Taste and Cinema Azteca, as well as performances and events presented by other cultural organizations. The theater is also available for private rentals. Visit mcadenver.org/holiday-theater to learn more. Well, it's interesting to hear you talk about that process because, you know, looking at your work, you've worked with a lot of celebrities who have had to deal with their image being portrayed in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. Is there a way that you coax a different perspective out of them, or is it like you're building a relationship with them? Like, what's that process like?
I think the process is just, for me, it's like letting folks know, like, I always keep their best interest at heart. Like, trying to make anyone look foolish. I'm trying to make people look strong and proud and, like, beautiful. Like, that's always my goal. And so I think if someone isn't maybe familiar with my work, if they look at the work, they'll be like, oh, she's not here to play. She really wants to make something great with me, you know?
That's cool.
So I really want to make, like, the whole experience really lovely, because like I said, like some folks that I do work with, I have photographed celebrities, but a lot of the people that I photograph are not, you know, and it's their first time getting their picture taken. And so for me, like I said, it's just about making like a really comfortable environment, because it's kind of intrusive to get your picture taken. Someone's all up in your face, you don't know them, and they want you to do X, Y, and Z. And so it's really important that you have to build a rapport, because if someone doesn't trust you, you're not going to get a good photo, you know? And so try and make it comfortable.
It's such an interesting thing, because it's a collaborative art, even though the person who's being photographed is not necessarily creating the art per se.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's just an interesting thing to me.
Yeah. In some, but they have to be vulnerable enough to let themselves be seen, right?
Yeah.
So in that way, they are part of the process, right? Like, I can't make the photo without them, and I can't make a photo without their vulnerability and their trust. And so it is collaborative in that way.
Huh, that's really cool. Okay, so let's rewind. You encountered photography in high school.
Yeah.
You pretty much kind of knew that was the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I feel lucky because I come from, you know, an immigrant family. Like, everyone in my family, you know, blue collar workers.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I wanted to study, like, when I went to college. Even that, like, you know, one of the first people in my family to go to college. And so I thought, okay, I guess I'm going to study business or communications. And then, but just because I didn't know that I had a choice, really, you know, I'm like, I guess this is what people do. You go to school and you study one of those things, or you become a doctor, a lawyer. And that wasn't, you know, that wasn't in my, on my journey. And so I thought, okay, I'll do one of those two other things. And then I discovered photography. And then I was like, oh, this is an option when, you know, you're applying for school and you see like art is a major you can study. I was like, oh my God, no one told me this before. This is amazing, you know?
Right.
And so, yeah, in high school, around my sophomore year, I discovered, you know, that I really enjoyed photography and that this could be something that I could do, you know, for a living.
Yeah. Okay. So you embraced it. You find it. First of all, was there resistance from your family?
I think, you know, it's funny because I told my dad, oh, I'm going to study communications. And I think that he probably told all his friends that my daughter is going to study communications even after I, like, graduated, you know. But I think there was never pushback from my mom. Okay. You know, she grew up in a really strict family, like the oldest of seven. And she had a lot of restrictions in her life. And I don't think that she wanted that for her kids. And so she was like, whatever you want to do, I'm going to support you. I might not know the first thing to tell you about how to get to where you want to go, but I'm going to support you, which is huge in itself.
That's,
you know,
cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I think my dad, I think he was kind of like, what are you talking about? Like, what are you going to do with an art degree? You know? And I think it's just out of fear. Like, he wants his daughter to be happy and successful and be earning a living. And he didn't know how I could do that as an artist, you know, but sometimes I think, I don't even know if he really understands what I fully do, but I think that he's proud nonetheless, you know?
That's cool.
Yeah.
It really is the unknown, right? Like, because the way to making a living as an artist, period, is different. It's different for so many people, even within the same discipline.
Totally.
Yeah. So I think that I can totally understand my parents' fear and your father's fear, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you decided to go to school. Did you go to college after high school for photography or?
I did. Yeah. Okay. I went to San Francisco State.
Okay.
And then I graduated and was like, I don't know enough yet. I need to learn more. I went to a very like art centered school.
Okay.
That didn't teach a lot of technique. And I was like, I need to know how to light things. I need to know how to run a business. Like, the school I went to was very much like, here's an art studio, create art. I'm like, and that's wonderful. And it's great. And I had such a lovely experience. But I didn't learn like some fundamentals that I wanted to learn.
I talked to so many artists who say that their business part is not.
No, I did not learn it in school. So I recognized, oh, there's some holes you need to fill. Right, like, there's some things I need to learn.
Yeah, it's good you could identify that.
So actually, believe it or not, I kind of went backwards. I went to City College at night in San Francisco. They have an incredible, at the time, I wouldn't be surprised if they still do, like, incredible photo program that taught about marketing and taught about business. It taught how to light. And so I think I went to school for another 2 years at night, you know, just like learning more, and met a bunch of awesome photographers and that we're still in touch with today. But I would say I learned the most, like, interning and assisting. Like, that's where you really learn. Like, for me, that's where I learned. And so I did all of, you know, I went to school, then I went to City College, and then started assisting where I could. And that's where I really saw, like, the process demystified, because it's all esoteric, right, until you're, like, in it. And so, you know, I would assist my friends if they had editorial gigs and learn how to light, learn how to talk to people, like, learn to know what to ask for, you know?
I was going
to
ask about that part, learning how to talk to people. So was that in school at all, or it was just...
It's like trial and error, right? Yeah. You got to, like, figure it out. And I mean, maybe some schools do teach that. I don't know what other programs are like, but it wasn't my experience. Yeah. No, yeah. And so I didn't know that you could ask for certain things from someone hiring you to take a picture for, say, a magazine or a newspaper or, you know, or, you just learn a lot, like, on the job, right? And so that's where I learned the most.
Okay. So you go through this process of interning, you learn all this stuff.
Yeah.
Is there a point where you're like, now it's time for me to do my thing? Or was it just sort of a gradual?
I think it's always been gradual. You know, I've been really lucky to kind of have always have art-related jobs.
Yeah.
So I worked in galleries, or I worked at a photo studio. I worked at a photo studio on an Air Force base. Huh. I've, you know, worked at a photo studio taking pictures of, like, little kids and families. Like,
wherever pictures are.
Wherever I could. Yeah, exactly. Like, wherever I could keep myself in, like, kind of the art world, you know, I did. And so... I did that for a long time, and my husband's actually a photographer too.
Okay.
And he was freelance. He went freelance before I did, and I had a lot of fear around it. I'm like, well, what if I can't, you know, meet my budgetary needs? Like, what if the month is slow? Like, and so I always had a day job, but would on the weekends or after work, like, you know, shoot editorially if I could, or work on personal projects, which is like a big part of like my practice. So the moment I decided to start my business was when we moved to LA.
Okay.
And so I was in San Francisco for about 10 years. So I went to school there and stayed for a little while. And I'd been in San Francisco for 10 years. You know, my partner who's with today, he's my husband. We were like, okay, we've been here for 10 years. I feel like we've done all we could do here. What's next? Right. And he's from New York. So I thought, oh, well, maybe we'll go to New York. We went to New York for a couple months and I love New York. And so I was kind of shocked when we got there and it didn't feel like a natural fit. Huh. I was like, oh, this is weird. Like, I love New York. Like, I want to make it happen here. Why isn't it happening? And then we thought, okay, what about LA? Mm-hmm. And I had lived in LA before.
Okay.
Had a great experience. But after 8 months, I went back to Sacramento where I'm from. So I was like, I don't know if I want to move back to LA. You know, like traffic is a real thing out there. And I was living in Whittier, commuting to the opposite side of the city. I was in my car like 2 hours one way, like after work.
And there's so, a meme that says that LA is 6 hours away from LA.
Yeah, that's funny. And yeah, kind of for real. Yeah. Like it was a lot. And so I had a lot of reservations about going back.
Right.
But once we went to LA, things fell into place really quickly. Okay. And I took that as a sign. It's like, oh, we're in the right place and you can do it. And so about 10 years ago was when I took the plunge. Yeah. And I think LA is a good place to do that because there is a lot of work. If you're a creative person, mm-hmm. if you're an actor, a musician, a photographer, whatever, there is work. You know, of course, you have to build your networks, but there is a lot of work there. And so we were able to, you know, keep it going. But, you know, for full transparency, like for anybody who might be watching this too, I there were points along those 10 years where I wanted to quit. I was like, man, this contracting, this freelancing, it is a hustle. You really have to be out there reaching out to people, just out there, right? And so it started to get to me a little bit, and I think I had a slow month, and I was like, you know what? I think I'm gonna see what else I can do in the art world, but like, you know, like I was like, okay,
let me see what I can do. Yeah. I want to ask you more about that. And, you know, like there is that feast or famine thing, right? When you're freelance,
to your own thing. Yeah.
But, it sounds like based on what you said, the networking, the sort of building contacts, and that was the stuff that was most stressful to you. Is that right or no?
Or I guess what was most stressful is kind of like the never ending cycle of a contractor, right? Like if you're working at a 9 to 5, you know, every day you have somewhere to be, a paycheck coming in. And as a freelancer, you know, that's not always the case, right? It could be really busy one week and then dead and slow the next week, right?
Right.
So there was a lot of like, learning to not panic in the slow times, you know? But every time I was about to throw in the towel, you know, my partner would be like, no, it's all right. You got this. Like, breathe.
Cool.
It's just it's just slow right now. Tomorrow could be different. And I don't think I fully learned that lesson until I was like, okay, this is it. Like, I'm going to keep doing photography on the side. I'm going to see what else is out there. I just wanted a steadier income, right?
Yeah.
And I went to bed kind of like depressed and annoyed. And I was like, you know, like, all right, I'm going to just do something else. And then I woke up in the morning kind of feeling defeated and then got an email from like a magazine that I'd always wanted to work with. And like, oh, we have a job for you. Nice. And I took that as a sign from like the universe, you know, I was like, all right, you're on the right path. It's not always going to be easy. Like, and maybe nothing worth having is.
Right.
And for me, that, again, was just a sign, like, keep on the path, you know? I think it's normal to be like, what should I do? It's not quite how I thought it was going to be. And I think sometimes that's, like, from lack of maybe transparency from, like, your peers. Like, because from the outside looking in, like, if you're just scrolling on Instagram, you think everybody's doing amazing,
right.
Like, you talk to your friends and they're doing X, Y, and Z. And you're like, oh, man, I'd love to be doing that. Why am I not doing that? What's wrong with me? You know, it's like this whole cycle.
Well, then there's also this idea that there's, like, a point of, like, making it.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas like if you're working full time as a creative person, when is making it, right? Like you're always having to do new work.
Yeah.
You're always having to hustle up new work.
Yeah.
And but if we, I think we have sort of this narrowly defined thing, like when I become an artist, you know, and like the reality isn't like that, right? It is.
No.
It's a constant hustle, but it's so much better than doing the things that are like, I don't know, detrimental to our souls.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's so funny. When I lived in San Francisco, there was a gallery there that I always wanted to show in. And I was part of this women photo collective. And we booked a show there. And I was like, this is the greatest moment of my life. I was so excited.
Yeah.
And we were at the opening. And, you know, friends and family are there. And, like, my friend who's also in the collective comes up to me. She's like, are you okay? You don't seem as excited as I thought you would be. You were so excited. She knew how much it meant to me to show there. And I was like, yeah, I had that, what you just said, I had that thought. I was just like, this is great, but what is like, okay, now I achieved this, like what's next? Like, right. So just like redefining what like success is and like not being, and also appreciating those moments, yes. You know, like I was like appreciative, but also I was like, okay, now I did it. Now what else do I have to do? Or like, what else should I do? And like kind of being caught up in that a little, but then realizing like it's important to like celebrate those milestones because there is always going to be something else, you know? Yeah. And that's just like the nature of like what you, exactly what you just said of like this creative process, you know?
It's such an interesting. And I think with you, it's really interesting since both you and your husband are photographers. So you're both sort of like on that treadmill, sort of, so to speak.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think the unpredictable nature of a creative job means that, like, there has to be, especially when it's two people in a household, it means that there has to be, like, some strong communication, some setting of expectations, you know, like, some sort of mutual agreements on things. So how do you navigate through that stuff?
It's a good question. You know, a lot of patience. Right on. My husband and I, his name is Trevor Trainer. He's an awesome photographer. Right, we work really differently, like night and day.
Okay.
So in the beginning, it was really challenging because he likes things done a certain way. I like things done a certain way. Yeah. And of course, egos can be like, well, my way is the better way. Aaron. He's right. Like, you know, and I think for us, it was just like learning to understand that like, we each have our own way and it's okay. And so we've learned to work better over the years, but it takes a while. Like you don't get there overnight, especially when folks have such different ways of doing things. But also I think we're such a good match because we can kind of call each other on things if we need to, just also like, he'll tell me like when he sees that I'm like burning out, he's like, you're burning out. Like, and I'm like, no, I'm not. He's like, you might be burning out.
I can
like
keep going.
Yeah. So it's good to have that like awareness from your partner, like mirrored back to you. Like, oh, maybe I am. Cause left to my own demise, like I'll, you know, run myself to the ground. And so it's nice to have a partner who's also creative because he understands like what it's like the highs and the lows. And like, we can talk each other off the ledge because it is, you know, over the years we've you know, learned to manage that wave of ups and downs. It's not it doesn't feel like a tsunami anymore. It just feels like, oh, this is a natural way that things are. And it's maybe it's low now, but it can be high tomorrow. So like just learning to ride the wave, like together peacefully, you know?
Hmm. Okay. So you mentioned editorial work sort of being your bread and butter for a while.
Yeah.
Is that kind of your focus now? Like, I know a lot of the work that I saw was, I think, editorial work. But
Yeah. I love editorial work because it's, you know, it's like meaning that I'll work with different magazines or newspapers and they'll say, hey, Amanda, we have this shoot. Someone will give you an hour. This is what we need. And I really like that the challenge of that. Like, okay, what can I make happen in this short period of time? Like, I feel like I thrive in those situations.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of editorial work. Right now I'm transitioning to doing more commercial work.
Okay.
And then I have like, you know, my own art practice that I do like for me. Yeah, you know?
That's dope. Okay, so you know, I know that you wouldn't necessarily be inclined to name drop the people that you photograph, but what's most interesting to me is what your experience was. So for people who are listening, you know, they can go to your site, we'll say it at the end, they can Google it, but you've done stuff with Snoop Dogg, you've done the star of Abbott Elementary.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, so I want to know what it was like for you, maybe the first time that there was like a celebrity that you felt like was like big or whatever, and you had to do this editorial work. Were you nervous? Mm-hmm. Was it just the same? Like, what was the experience like?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, so the first kind of big editorial shoot I did with Celeb was with Snoop Dogg.
Okay.
And I was nervous. I was like, OMG, I'm going to photograph Snoop Dogg, you know? And he was so kind and so awesome. And that shoot kind of showed me like, you know, it was editorial, so very limited amount of time. Maybe I got half an hour with him.
Okay.
And after that process, I felt like a new page had turned because I was like, oh, he's human. Right. He wants to be treated just like everybody else, yeah. you know? And he was so kind. Uh-huh. And I did the exact same thing that I, my whole process, you know, how I work with yeah. him that I do with a non-celebrity. It's the same yeah. thing for me. So that having that experience was like, okay, like I can do this. It's fine, you know? Yeah. And I've been lucky that for the most part, like over like 10 years, maybe one time mm-hmm. was kind of a funny situation with some, like, you know, someone I was working with, but uh-huh. Like hundreds of other amazing people like were so open to the whole like photo process, you know? And so, yeah that was the first time that I felt like, okay, I can do this. And I didn't have to worry so much about like putting folks on a pedestal, because right. for me that would make me nervous, yes. you know, like he's human, right. you know? And so, yeah.
That's cool that you could find mm-hmm. that in there and
yeah.
and that your process was validated, right? Like, because this yeah. is what you've been doing, and then you're able to connect with the humanity in him and I guess carry that on to the rest of your celebrity work. yeah. I did air quotes for people listening.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, okay, so you've gotten to this point, the editorial stuff strong. You said that you do some things for your artistic satisfaction.
Yeah.
That wasn't exactly what you said, but.
Yeah, like my art practice, like yeah. I do like personal work just for me. I think for me, photography is like a healing thing.
Oh, cool.
You know, like for me, it's I like to work on projects that mm. like. Well, first of all, I think like the project comes to you.
Okay.
You know, well, at least in my practice, like something will keep coming up for me and coming up for me and coming up for me. I'm like, and I've learned to like listen to those things, because in the past I might have just been like, oh, okay, cool. But if you don't listen to, because the idea is coming to you for a reason, yeah. right? Like it wants you to make this thing. And if you're not willing to do it at the time, or you can't at the time, it's totally okay. But the idea will go to someone else, because mm. it wants to be made, right? And this is like from, I read a book. Elizabeth Gilbert has this book. I think it's called Big Magic. And okay. she talks about that. And when I read that, that felt, it made sense to me, because a lot of the personal work that I do like is ideas that come. And sometimes my process is like, I like to work slowly. I like to do research. I like to read a lot about something I'm interested in, and then figure out what that will look like photographically, you know? Mm-hmm. And I like to take my time with things, especially if it's personal and it's for you. Like, I don't necessarily have a time limit right. for something. So, yeah.
Is that stuff mostly portraiture as well?
Always portraiture, yeah. Okay. yeah. yeah, I like, you know, my last project was a project called Guadalupe. Okay. And it was, I grew up Catholic. In a very Catholic family, and I'm Mexican American, you know, and yeah. so Our Lady of Guadalupe, not only is she Mexico's patron saint, but she's also who the church that I grew up going to was named after.
Okay.
So her image was like super ingrained into my psyche mm-hmm. from the time I was born till now. Okay. And so that was like one project that I worked on, just kind of exploring the ways that she had like impacted my life, you know?
So, did you have like a model dress as Guadalupe, or?
I did a lot of different things. Like I worked on the project over the course of like 10 years.
Oh, wow.
Just little by little, here yeah. and there. And then I came to the conclusion like, okay, like projects want to be made, right? But they also want to be finished. And so I was right. like, okay, I've been working on this for a little while. Like I like to give myself deadlines. And so in 2019, yeah. December 12th is Our Lady of Guadalupe's like feast day. So I was like, okay. all right, I'm going to finish this project on December 12th. Of 2019. And so that year, 2019, I just like worked on it, you know, as much as I could,
right.
you know? And that's so, dope. Yeah. So yeah, my personal projects, they just kind of like feed me.
That's a great place to be, you know? Cause I just think as creators, we have a lot of voices inside and outside our heads,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
Telling us what things should be and stuff like that. So
yeah.
you can be satisfied by you being satisfied.
Yeah,
That's a really dope place to be.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm almost to the point, you know, I told you I ask everybody about fear.
Yeah.
I'm almost to the point where we should like add a music cue that's like dun, dun, dun. but like how do you, when you're in your artistic process, I guess first, how do you experience fear? Mm-hmm. Like when does it usually come in? And then how do you work through it?
Mm-hmm. So I experience fear kind of in the beginning stages of like any project. So whether it's like my own personal work mm. or like I'm getting a call to go do something. Like, yeah. It might be the first feeling that I feel, like, okay. Next to excitement. So it's excitement.
Yeah.
And then it's like you said, dun, 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 right. A little fear. Uh-huh. And then it turns back into excitement. And so the fear doesn't last long. Mm. It's like this, it's almost like a fear of like, oh, I hope I do a good job. Mm. Like, I hope that I'm able to communicate in the photo what I want to communicate. So it's fear of that, you know? Yeah. But once it turns back to excitement, so excitement, fear, excitement, then I'm like good, you know? But yeah. it is part of like my, I guess what I want to say, it's part of my, like, it comes up in everything that I do.
Cycle, part of the process.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, the more artists like you that I talk to, that seems to be a theme, right? Is like, when we can just accept that fear is part of the process, then it doesn't mean it has to stop us.
Yeah.
Right? Like, there's nothing wrong with us for experiencing
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it makes our decisions, if it stops us from moving forward, then that's a problem.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fear. It's a funny thing. I used to be ashamed of it, right? Like, oh, why am I scared?
Yeah.
Why can't I? You know, it's like right. a shame. And then you're like, huh, well, it doesn't last long. It goes away. And I'm so happy that you just said that because like, oh, a lot of people are experiencing it.
Yeah.
It's fine, you know? So it's like good to talk to other creative people yeah. and like hear that because it validates like the process, right?
I don't think there's anybody that I've asked that question. Maybe. I can't think of anybody that I asked that question. They were like, no, I don't feel good. No, why would you ask me?
They'd be superhuman.
Right, did, right. Yeah. So, yeah, it is universal. But I think the way fear works is by making us feel like something's wrong with us.
Yeah.
And making us feel like we want to get smaller and,
yeah.
you know, like just compressed. And if we keep moving, then it does. It just passes.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Also, another thing it brings up for me is like imposter syndrome, right? Yeah. Like you feel like I feel the fear and I'm like, ooh, am I the right person for this? Ooh, can I do it? You know, like it's right. just like you just start to feel kind of an imposter like.
Yeah. You know, one of the things I think about with imposter syndrome, and I probably have said this before, but there are two examples. One is just in general, there are people whose art I don't like. I'm not gonna name anybody, but I'm like, they're not ashamed of that shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, so why
that's
should I
hilarious.
Be ashamed? Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's kind of like that's I funny. Take inspiration from the stuff I dislike.
Yeah,
do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally. I also yeah. think like too, like someone can't like everything, or yeah. a piece of art can't make everybody feel right. something or happy, you know, and like. Even with like my work, again, that's like the success of it. Like, right when I'm like, oh, do I like it? Cool. Because if someone else doesn't like it, like it, that doesn't
yeah.
make me feel any less successful. I'm like, oh, you don't get it. That's cool. Or, oh, you don't like it. That's cool. Because again, no one can like everything. Right.
Right.
So, yeah.
Right. All right. So my other example, there's this story about Robert Kirkman who created The Walking Dead.
Okay.
You familiar with the show?
I am. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
So it was a comic book first.
Oh, okay.
And so when he was going to pitch the comic book to Image Comics, the publisher, at the time, horror comics had not done well mm-hmm. for decades. And so, you know, he was like, you know, zombie thing. They were like, well, I don't know. Horror comics don't really sell. And he's like, oh, I forgot to tell you the hook. The zombies are going to be an advanced team for invading aliens. So then the editor is like, oh, all right, that sounds cool. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. So they publish it. They're like 6 months in. It's doing well. The editor comes back to Kirkman. He's like, hey, I'm glad it's doing well, but I don't see any of the alien stuff. And Kirkman's like, I just made that up so you would publish it. You know,
that's amazing.
Right. And what I take from that is, one, everybody's just making their best guess, you know?
Like, yeah.
How many people turn down Elvis or the Beatles
yeah, yeah.
or James Brown
yeah.
or Michael, whatever, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like I was just listening to a podcast today with the creators of Wednesday, the Wednesday Adams
Show. Oh
yeah, on
Netflix. Uh huh.
Yeah, and they're the same guys who created Smallville.
Okay.
And they said when they first went out with it, nobody accepted it except for Netflix.
Mm.
Like they went to every streaming place, and everybody turned it down.
Mm.
And then through some process, some things didn't work out, like with the studio that was helping to make it. So then it kind of died.
Mm.
But then they got Tim
Burton.
Yeah. I don't know why I struggle with it. Thank you.
It's okay.
They got Tim Burton on it, right?
Uh-huh.
And so then they go back out with it. Now they have 5 episodes written and they got Tim Burton.
Yeah.
Same thing. Only Netflix bought it.
Oh, interesting.
And now it's one of the biggest hits Netflix has ever had.
Yeah, yeah.
And it doesn't mean that the people who turned it down were wrong.
Yeah.
or bad people per se. It just means that like everybody's guessing.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
And so like I think that imposter syndrome for me is like, all right, well, if everybody's just making their best guess, you know, then they need to just guess on mine. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But also I think everybody had a first time that they did something.
Yeah.
So like everybody's real. You know, if you make art, you're an artist. Mm-hmm. That's how it goes. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times we conflate commerce with art, like the ability to make a living.
Yeah.
As if that determines the value of art. And I don't think that's true.
Yeah. I don't think that's true either. Yeah, like I was saying earlier, like I think everybody's an artist, you know? I think sometimes people don't even realize it, you know? Like, I'm sure you have creative friends. You're like, man, you know. Like, I look at, like, my mom, you know? Like, she's a really creative lady.
Yeah.
And I don't think she'd call herself an artist. But I look at her, I'm like, she's so creative, you know? Like, in the way that she puts things together, like... Like I was telling you earlier, she enjoys throwing parties, and right now she's really big on throwing parties for my niece because she's a COVID baby, and so she didn't get to be around kids and missed out on a lot of like birthday parties. So now she's doing like Halloween parties and Easter parties for her, and like just in the way that she like puts things together for her granddaughter is like so pretty, like beautiful to me, you know. I think everybody has a little creativity in them, you know.
I agree. When you're talking about your niece, I was thinking about my own niece who's about to turn 8. So the only time I've ever, she lives in D.C. Mm-hmm. Only time I've ever missed her birthday was the lockdown year. But in that year, we started doing a weekly Zoom.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and she was like 5 at the time.
Oh, wow.
So sometimes the Zoom would be 2 minutes, sometimes it'd be 2 hours. It just depends on, you know. What.
Yeah, her mood.
Yeah. But so lately... So I never learned how to play chess just for reasons.
I don't know how to play chess either.
Okay,
yeah. You're with me. Checkers, though.
Yeah, right. I will double jump all over the place, yeah.
Yeah.
But she learned how to play chess.
Oh, wow.
And so so I'm learning to play with her. And
oh, that's cool.
So she'll send me a link on the Zoom, and you know we'll play chess on some website or whatever. And
that's cool.
So she knows I'm learning, and she's like, Uncle Alan, I see a move at like, you know, G45 or something.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, so I moved there. And then she just ran the whole chessboard.
Oh.
And I was like, oh for real? Yeah. I was like, I can't trust my niece. She was like,
oh, that's funny. Yeah.
So I thought that was hilarious. Funny.
I love that. Kids are the best, man.
Right.
I love, my sister, her daughter's 3. And I'm obsessed with her daughter. She's the best. And she's so creative.
Yeah.
She loves to dress up. She loves to sing. And I'm like in awe of her, you know? Like,
yeah.
Kids are so creative.
Yeah, I love smart. It all too because, you know, my uncles and aunts, they didn't really make any concerted effort to know me. But now that, you know, they're like in their late 60s, 70s, they're like, hey, you should come visit me. And I don't know them. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's interesting.
So it's when my niece was born, I was really determined that we were going to have a relationship.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm very happy about it.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And even more so because she's. You guys are in the same city. So it's a big, it's an effort and that you're like happy to make. That's awesome.
Yep. So every Wednesday, I get hustled in chess.
Oh, that's beautiful.
All right. So I want to ask, where can people find your stuff online?
Sure. People can find my stuff on my website, amandalopezphoto.com, or on Instagram is where I share like the things I'm working on, which is Snapshot Lopes.
Nice.
On Instagram. It's Lopez. My last name is Lopez with a Z, but my Instagram handle is with an S. I have a friend who he calls me Lopes, and so it kind of just stuck, Snapshot Lopes. But it confuses people sometimes because they're like, Lopes or Lopez? I'm like, it's Lopez, but online it's Lopes. But yeah, Snapshot Lopes on Instagram or AmandaLopezPhoto.com.
It sounds like a dope-ass character. Like,
yeah, right?
Like a journalistic photographer or something.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Follow their adventures, they solve a mystery.
Yeah.
Snapshot Lopes.
Yeah, detective.
Right. What's next for you artistically? Like, where are you headed? What are you?
That's a good question. Artistically, I am in a couple weeks on the West Coast. I'm showing some work in a group capacity, and also in December I'm going to be showing the Guadalupe series that I mentioned earlier. That'll be in LA, and then just kind of like. Mentally, like what's next for me is just like slowing down and finding balance, you know, because, you know, the creative freelance life, like for me, I'm not so great with like the work-life balance. And so I'm working on doing that. And I recommend that for all creative people because it can really be, for me, it was like, it can be like, if I burn out, then I won't want to make art. And so it's really important for me to like slow down. And I've just been I've been going so hard for like these past couple of years that I can feel it in myself that I need to like chill. And so that's what I'm doing on the emotional side.
Yeah. You know, I just joined the board of Lighthouse Writers Workshop here, mm-hmm. which is like, if you're an adult and you want to take writing classes, it's not for grades. It's just, you know.
Yeah.
And I was meeting with one of the founders and we were talking about how the business of writing takes more time than the actual writing.
Yeah.
You know, and just the business of being a creative person, like mm-hmm. answering emails, doing taxes.
Yes.
All the contacts and networking that you mentioned. Uh-huh. You know, like all of that stuff takes up so much time that you have to like fight for the space to actually do the stuff that made you want to do this in the first place.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And it's such an interesting thing because, you know, you can get caught up in both and burn yourself out in the way that you're talking about.
Totally.
So good for you that you're taking a step back.
Yeah, I'm trying to. We'll see. You know, I'm like my own worst enemy, right? Thanks. Yeah.
All right. So one of the things I like to end with is, what is inspiring you? Like, what's a geeky pleasure? Like, is it a show? Mm. Is it a movie? Is it music? Like, what's inspiring you creatively?
What's inspiring me creatively? I find inspo in all kinds of different places. I love like visual, like photo books mm-hmm. and magazines and in music, you know. These past couple months, I haven't had a lot of time to read, but I really enjoy reading as like, because I think part of the creative process too, right, is like, is the downtime, right? Like you need the space to just think. And I think, and I realized for myself that I haven't been allowing myself the space to like dive into the things that inspire me because of like the little hamster wheel that you can kind of get caught on. But, you know, this week I picked up a book and it was so nice to like slow down in that way, right? Because that's when the ideas come. And so, like I've been finding inspiration in books. And I used to love going to bookstores. Huh. There was a Tower Records by my house when I was growing up.
Oh, word.
Tower Books, my bad. There was also a Tower Records in Sacramento. Right. But and I used to love going there. I'd spend hours just like looking at all the magazines and photo books. And it brings me a lot of joy to do that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Are there certain periods of like photography that appeal to you more?
You know what? I grew up in like the 90s, 2000s. Mm-hmm. And so like one of the first kind of inspirations in my photo work was like hip hop photography.
Okay.
So like the Jonathan Mannions of the world, Esteban Orioles, like guys that were really out there documenting hip hop culture. Like the work, the photos from like the late 90s, early 2000s of, you know, of all these different hip hop artists are like stunning. The level of production is like incredible.
Hmm.
And that particular era of like photography, I love. I go back to all the time, you know. And also like Annie Leibovitz is like another inspo. Right. And like during that time she was making, I like all the stuff that she does, but she was making really exceptional work like during that period when I was in high school and college, like looking at all these magazines, you know.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. So during that period of hip-hop photography, when you got to photograph Snoop, did that connect for you?
Yeah, I mean, that was like a big moment, you know, because I had some of my photo idols had been working with him for a long time and to like get that opportunity also kind of felt like a sign from the universe. Okay, you're on the right path. That's really what's kept me going, you know, like the support of my family, but also like the universe nudging me like, okay, you're on the right path. You got this, you know, and I think it's important to like have those moments, you know.
Right.
So
that's dope.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else that you want to share about what you're working or plug anything or you feel like you got all the good stuff in?
Yeah. The last thing I'm working on, and this is going to be a long-term project that I just started, last year, is I'm photographing underrepresented artists in country music. And so it's self-funded, so I go to Nashville when I can and document or make portraits with folks that haven't been represented in the mainstream arena. Country music has a lot of stereotypes that are, I should back up and say, like, I'm really interested in, like, highlighting underrepresented folks, like, as a Latina who didn't grow up seeing herself in, you know, museums and photo books and anything, that's a passion of mine. And one of my cousins, when I was like, I don't know, 9, introduced me to country music. And it's kind of been this like little secret of mine, because everyone always says I like everything but country music. And I don't blame them, because there's a lot of things that I don't like about the mainstream. But what I realize is there's so many BIPOC LGBTQ artists making music that you aren't hearing on the radio right now, but you can find them on Spotify. You can find them online. Hmm. Their music is amazing. That makes me feel more open to saying, yeah, I like country music. And so it's something that I've been working on.
Thank you for talking about that. It's dope.
Thanks.
There's a reality show.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet. But actually, one of the hosts, Mickey Guyton, she was one of the first black country singers that I learned about.
Yeah.
I found her music on Spotify.
Okay.
And her song came up. And I was like, who is singing right now? And I saw that who it was. I was like, she's amazing. So I Googled her. And I was like, she is a black country singer. And she made me proud to like country music, you know. So what she's doing actually is incredible in that space. Like, she's a huge advocate for change. And so I love it.
I tell you, like, I never grabbed onto country myself, but my mom and my sister super into it. Like,
oh, nice.
To the point where we're like, we'll be, you know how like you're in a store and they play music or like in a movie theater beforehand.
Yeah.
And they'll be singing along. And I'll be like, how do you guys know this song?
Oh, I love that. You know? Well, you know, there's a lot of parallels in like country music to Mexican culture. Huh. And so as I dive deeper into this project, like, you know, I'm connecting a lot of dots, you know, like there's ranchero music is pretty much country music in Spanish, you know. And so even the style, like the all of my uncles, my tios are out here in cowboy boots and hats, you know. And so it's they're not necessarily listening to country music, but there's a lot of just similarities that I'm uncovering, and there's crossovers and stuff. And so. Yeah, it's something I'm working
on
slowly.
Interesting. I did live in Asheville, North Carolina from ages of 2 to 8, and I got really into bluegrass music.
Oh, nice.
And I like bluegrass better than country for a couple reasons. But one is a lot of bluegrass songs have a strong narrative structure, like very like strong storytelling in the ways that hip-hop does.
Yeah.
And a lot of like play on words and stuff like that. And some country has that, but gravitated towards the stuff in bluegrass. And for some reason, I love the banjo.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, that is an instrumental part of country music.
Well said.
Yeah. So, that makes sense.
Right on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I appreciate you taking time
to
talk to me, Amanda.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just want to make sure it's on the recording. Props to your hat game.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. My sister hooked it up. She gave me this hat.
Special thank you to today's guest, Amanda Lopez. Thank you to the listeners. If you're not already, please be sure to subscribe to How Art Is Born wherever you get your podcast for more episodes. And if you can, leave a review. It really helps us out. Check out MCA Denver on YouTube and subscribe to the channel to watch the video version of this podcast and get behind-the-scenes clips from today's episode. Visit MC Denver's current exhibition, Breakthroughs, celebrating Red Line at 15, on view now until May 28th, 2023. How Art Is Born is produced and edited by Daley Johnson and executive produced by Courtney Law. Additional thanks to Rachel Grammas for their work on marketing support for this episode.